welcome to the Polygamer Podcast, where gaming is for everyone. Join us as we expand the boundaries of the gaming community.
Hello, and welcome to the Polygamer Podcast, episode number 113 for Wednesday, May 19th, 2021. I'm your host, Ken Gagne. This podcast is primarily about diversity in video games, but diversity exists in a lot of other forms of interactive entertainment, including toys. The original Nintendo, released back in the mid-80s, was originally marketed as a toy, and around the time that I was playing with that, I was also playing with another very popular toy, those being Lego. A lot of us grew up with the building blocks. I primarily use them to build medieval sets and the pneumatic kits, but there are a lot of other different kinds of kits out there. Today, I'm very excited to talk with the creator of several modern Lego sets, specifically the Lego Women of NASA, which came out a few years ago, and now currently being voted on is the Lego Women of Computing. Join me in welcoming Lego fan creator Maya Weinstock. Hello, Maya.
Hey, Ken, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a joy to speak with you. I'm a fan of your kits. I had the Women of NASA set. I bought it for my niece and another one for myself, which is now with the Strong Museum of Play in New York. I have voted for the Women of Computing set. I love the work you do. I'm eager to talk to you about it. But first, let's introduce you to our audience. So who are you and what is it that you do by day? Are you like a professional Legoist?
No, not quite. I do enjoy Lego in my free time, but during the day, I am a science communicator. So I'm the deputy editorial director at MIT News, which is the news official news office of Massachusetts Institute of Technology. In my capacity there, I edit articles about MIT peer-reviewed research, about profiles, about students and faculty members and things like that. I also produce the MIT daily and weekly email newsletters. So I do wear quite a few hats. I'm a science writer by training, I guess. I have long been either writing or editing for both adults and children audiences. And I do have a background in biology. So I've been doing quite a few things over my career, but Lego is definitely something that is more of a hobby. So yeah.
Awesome. That sounds like an exhausting and exciting amount of work you do at MIT because, of course, the research that's done there is cutting edge. So you're not just putting out like a student newsletter. You're talking about things that will impact society at large years in the future.
I mean, certainly we have quite a lot of high impact research. I mean, as with any research institute, you know, not everything ends up being world changing, but that is how science and engineering progress. So absolutely, there's a ton of news that comes out. And of course, you know, MIT is not only science and engineering. We have a fantastic humanities school. We are constantly bombarded in a good way with updates from around the institute, and it's really an exciting place to be. But certainly, I mean, when you talk about, you know, our scientists who helped work, you know, who helped basically establish the LIGO and the discovery of gravitational waves. I mean, certainly that was like, for example, one monumental discovery that was very exciting to be a part of. And you know, we have lots of other engineering feats that may be smaller scale in terms of the publicity, but are similarly very important for their fields. And so it, as I said, is an exciting place to be if you're a science writer or science editor.
That's fantastic. And I only scratched a small amount of all the things that happened at MIT in the years that I worked there. But fortunately, that is how you and I met. We were both part of the social media working group trying to figure out the best ways to share all this, all these things that happen at MIT through various online outlets. And I'm glad that introduced me to your work, not only at MIT, but also with Lego, which you've been doing for years now. What is your background with Lego? Did you grow up playing with it like I did?
Absolutely. I did grow up playing with Lego. And, I didn't continue through like my adolescence and then early high school playing with Lego. I sort of stopped after a while. I think a lot of people do kind of run that route where when they're kids, they are introduced to Lego, but then they sort of grow out of it or just move their attentions elsewhere. And that certainly was actually me as well. I re-picked it up right around 2009, I believe it was, I had actually seen somebody else's Ada Lovelace Lego. They had a collection of historic figures on Flickr, I think. And I had seen that and I thought, you know, wow, that is an interesting way to potentially celebrate people who are in science and engineering. And at that time, I thought, you know, I would like to try to do that. I knew absolutely nothing about how to find the individual parts because I really hadn't played with them since I was a kid. I mean, I really enjoyed some of the old space sets and the castle sets from the 80s when I was growing up, but I didn't have any of those anymore. And I certainly had not had any introduction to, you know, the AFOL, which is Adult Fans of Lego community. And so I kind of had to like learn on the go and just kind of pick things up slowly. But from there, I decided to try to make, as a prototype, a minifigure of a friend of mine who is a longtime planetary scientist, Carolyn Porco. And I had been in touch with her about a number of projects at that time. And so I figured out how to make a minifigure that looked quite like her, including like recreating this vest that she used to wear quite a bit. And especially she gave a TED talk and she was wearing this vest and just happened to look like the Han Solo Lego vest. So I grabbed that and, you know, so from there, it was a lot of fun putting that together. And she really liked it when I gave it to her. And I made a few more. I made like a handful of other scientists and science communicators at the time who were on Twitter. I was sort of fairly new to Twitter and, you know, thought that that was an interesting way to kind of get people to, be, you know, just get, increase people's awareness of the fact that scientists were actually out on Twitter and you could get to know them as real people and, you know, also get to know their process of discovery. Sometimes they talk about that. So I thought, well, this might be a nice way to, you know, popularize some folks just by making little Legos out of them and just putting them on Twitter and seeing what people thought about it. So that's kind of how I got back into it originally.
That's amazing. You mentioned the Han Solo coat, and I've always been curious, are you taking off-the-shelf parts and assembling them in new ways, or are you somehow creating original designs that look like the people you're emulating?
Definitely taking parts that are already made. I have looked into, and maybe someday when I retire or, you know, hit the jackpot, would love to kind of have a basement big enough to be able to buy the machinery to make my own pad printing. You know, that would be fun. But for now, I definitely rely on parts that have been either sold officially with Lego sets, and I would say 95% of the pieces that I use in my projects are official Lego pieces. And, you know, there are quite a few third-party sellers that design Lego elements that many of the times are based on Legos that were produced by Lego, but were either scraped of their design or were just empty. They were just plain. And then they were added either, you know, some kind of printing process. There are various processes you can do. Designs that other people have come up with. So it's definitely been a combination, but for the most part, I find pieces that are original Lego.
And there are websites, almost like an eBay for Lego bricks, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are a few, but I mean, the most popular I would say is BrickLink. And there are hundreds, if not thousands, of individual sellers. Some people, it's sort of their job, like they've made I don't know if you want to say a full career out of it. I guess they probably have. I would guess that there are some very high volume sellers that's kind of all they do. But I would say for the most part, the sellers on BrickLink are just everyday fans, collectors, people who have extra spare parts that they just want to get rid of. And it's just like a hobby to have the parts out there and available for people to purchase. You know, sometimes you happen to have a rare part and you can charge more for those. And you know, you set your prices. So, it's kind of an interesting process of trying to find the pieces, that you're wanting that, you know, at the lowest price, but also, you know, bundling them into bundles so that you're paying as few shipping costs as possible. So, it is a process to try to find things on there, when you're doing a larger project, but it's a lot of fun, especially when you're when you've made, you know, you've made your selections, you've ordered all the parts, and then you're like, all right, I have 10 bags coming in the next 2 weeks. And then, you know, the mail person comes and it's exciting to get your little Legos bundled all up.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So you said that you not only share these on Twitter, but you've also had the opportunity to give these creations to the people they're modeled after. Can you tell us what that's been like?
Yeah, that's been a lot of fun. And I haven't done it in a while. I mean, in part because of the pandemic. And, you know, at MIT, we sometimes get people to give talks at MIT who I might not otherwise have the opportunity to meet. But I've also just had the opportunity to meet people through other venues and brought the minifigs there. And I mean, that's been a lot of fun. I remember when I still lived in New York City, Jane Goodall gave a talk at NYU. And, you know, afterwards she was just, I don't remember if she was signing autographs or just saying hello. And I got in line and I gave her the little minifig I made her of her. And, you know, that was thrilling to just be able to say something more than like, you're amazing. You could say, you're amazing. And by the way, I made you this minifigure. And so she got a little smile out of that. So that's always fun, you know. But, you know, again, certainly having people come to MIT has been great. You know, I've also made some minifigures of people who are not necessarily in science, and that has been interesting as well. So, you know, I got to meet, for instance, you know, I had written about this not long ago on Twitter, but, you know, when the late Justice Ginsburg passed, you know, I remembered a little bit this fantastic day that I had an opportunity to sit in a car with her for half an hour with her marshals. And it's a long story of how that happened, but, you know, I was able to explain to her how I made my Legos, and I had made a bunch of Legos that were figures that looked like the first four women of the Supreme Court at the time. And, so that was, I mean, obviously fantastic, and just, I'll never forget that day. And she wrote me later saying to thank you. And I had given her sort of a framed version of those four minifigures. And she said that it was in her chambers for everyone to see. So never would I have ever imagined doing anything like that, both with Lego, but like, especially just the fact that Lego has given me that opportunity, you know, to kind of be out there with some creative works like that. It's been really fun.
Yeah, and it's not only that Lego gave you that opportunity, but also that you took the opportunity. So in this podcast, we talk a lot about diversity in video games and how it's important to be able to see yourself in a game. And that's hard to do if you're not a straight white cis man, because that's so many protagonists. Lego characters, though, they're small, yellow, rather generic individuals. So is the motivation similar, where it's important for people to see themselves in Lego? Is that one of the reasons why you do this?
Yes, I think that is definitely one of the motivations. And I mean, my early sort of, if you're going to say activist leanings in terms of trying to get, you know, projects on the Lego Ideas site has certainly been to increase the representation of women among and girls among Lego characters, like official Lego characters. I will say, since I started writing about gender and Lego back in 2012, I think, I started writing about this around the time when the Friends line came out, and there was a bit of a hubbub about, you know, the fact that they were creating this separate line for girls. You know, that was concerning on a number of fronts. I have since sort of changed a little bit of how I think about that. But at the end of the day, the reality is, at that time, there were extremely few women characters in just everyday sets that you could buy from Lego. And I am happy to say that that has changed very significantly in just a matter of 5 to 7 years. It is still not equal. It is still not even in terms of numbers, but it is by far, you know, just vastly better. Like, if you go to any Target or any just like mass market store and you look at the options there, many of the sets that you never would have even, you know, thought would have another character. Like, for instance, it was impossible back then to find a set that would only have a female character. You could not buy a set that was not in the Friends line that had just a female minifig, whether it was like a car racer or anything like that, you know. And now you can. And it's, you know, it's not super common, but it's definitely possible. And that was not the case back when I started talking about this stuff. So I know that the people at Lego are taking this in stride for sure. Somebody actually did a really nice study of, you know, the number of, in fact, a number of people have done studies of this, the number of female characters in the various sets. There's a great initiative called the Women's Brick Initiative. It's, you know, they're doing a really great job at looking at the numbers, and something that they're doing right now that I have been talking about also since about 2015, I wrote about this, and there's still a lot of work to go, is, you know, the question you raise about minifigures being yellow. You know, originally Lego had said, well, we want to be raceless, essentially. And, you know, they picked yellow as the color, the default color. And that has really proved to be problematic, I think. And, you know, WBI recently did this poll last year that looked at not only women, but, you know, people of color and how they respond to whether or not Lego parts that are yellow for you know, human type figures, you know, represent them. And it seemed pretty clear that, you know, if you have dark skin, you're not thinking that yellow minifigures represent you. And that's a problem. That's something that I'm definitely, you know, especially in the sets that I have done previously, I've, you know, wanted to include people of color showing their skin color rather than just yellow. I have actually recently completely stopped using yellow. I will not be using yellow minifigures anymore. I don't know if I've ever said this publicly, but that is just my thing now. And I do plan to write more about this. I just haven't had the time to fully write that out. But yeah, I mean, it's been an ongoing evolution, I think, in terms of representation. And I do feel confident that Lego is listening to these conversations from many people and many avenues. But I still think there is work to be done. I definitely do.
That's amazing. And I applaud you for not using yellow minifigs anymore. I didn't know that not using yellow wasn't even an option.
Yeah. I mean, they've been making, you know, realistic colors for skin for some time. It's just that they hardly ever use them. And they tend to only use them for intellectual property combinations, like sets that are based on real actual people. So for instance, the Harry Potter line, the Star Wars line, those are based on films that show actual people. And so they use real people colors there. But if you look at the City line, which is their default, just generic, you know, daily life characters, those are all still yellow. There are other character lines that are all yellow. I actually did a very unscientific, you know, review of the available sets last summer. And again, I just haven't had time to sort of put this into a larger post, but it was extremely clear that the number of, you know, non-light colored skin, meaning either like a peach color for a Caucasian type of color skin or yellow, because yellow is a light color, is extremely small. So again, I do think they are changing it a little bit by partnering with, you know, IPs that are including a little bit more inclusive. But again, there is a lot of work to be done.
And some of that work is being done by fan creators such as yourself who are proposing kits. And before we speak about your specific kits, can you tell us a little bit about how one goes about proposing an original design to Lego? I suspect a lot of people don't even know that's an option.
Sure. So the Lego Ideas site has been up for a while. I don't remember exactly when its predecessor QSO started. I want to say it was maybe 2011, something like that, or around then. But ever since then, fans have been able to sort of sign up to the site and upload their ideas. They can be either physically built out with parts that you take a picture of, or you can use a CAD style system where it's just a computer process that you can kind of use the catalog of available parts, and you have a little bit more flexibility there because you can actually sort of propose parts, or not parts necessarily, but you can propose like colors and things that don't exist. But in any case, you can just upload your ideas and provide a description, and then people upvote it. You know, this is how you can have sort of crowdsourcing of ideas. The Lego Ideas process has become super popular. And in the last couple of years, they've had a record number of, I don't know if submissions, but certainly they've had a record number of people who have gotten to the requisite 10,000 vote level. And at 10,000 votes, all sets that get to that point are guaranteed an official review by this review board at LEGO. And from those, I think three times a year, they will select usually one or two produce, you know, around the world. So it is an exciting process. And, you know, your odds are fairly low compared to the number of submissions. However, if your idea is, you know, unique enough and enough people vote for it and, you know, there's a clear sort of marketing interest, then it can happen. I mean, there have been, I don't know how many sets at this point, probably around 30, maybe. I would have to double check that. But yeah, it's a great opportunity. And I don't remember how old you have to be to submit. But I mean, honestly, like anybody can submit one and it's great. You don't have to be like the super fan. Yeah. So it's been a wonderful process. And that's how both of my, actually I've had four different projects, but yeah, that's how the Women of Computing, the one that's currently on there, is got started.
That's awesome. And you've had some success yourself with the LEGO Ideas website. You're here today to talk about the Women of Computing set. Previously, you submitted Women of NASA, which got accepted and built into an actual kit. Was that your first submission to LEGO Ideas?
My first one was actually this revised, it was called the Legal Justice Team, which was a revised version of the Legal Justice League, which I had created featuring, you know, the four women of the U.S. Supreme Court. And as you know, that one was not allowed to compete in the contest due to the rules about politics. But I basically rearranged it so that the minifigures were no longer representing real people. And I did submit that set revised in that way. And it did pretty well considering it was my first set. It got about 4,000 votes, which, you know, most sets, at least at that time, that was actually a fair number. But it didn't get to 10,000. But I did learn a lot from that process. And then I actually did have another set that totally, I don't want to use the word bombed, but did not do well at all. And it only got 400 total votes. And granted, I was not promoting it very much. But also, it taught me a little bit about what kinds of people in a set like the ones that I kind of do are more important to make sure that you include, just because name recognition is super important. So that one, that second one was called LEGO Bioneers, and it was bioengineers in one way or another. Some of them are chemical engineers. Some of them are, you know, chemists who work in the bio area. Some of them are, you know, just straight up medical engineers. And, you know, since then, two of them have actually won a Nobel Prize. So, like, you know, I did pick important people. I think at that time they weren't as well known, I guess. And so that one, but, you know, again, those kind of like helped me figure out how to process and package the one that would become LEGO Women of NASA. And that was my third set. It wasn't just like my first set. And I think it's important just to say, because your first set that you put on LEGO Ideas might not make it, you know, and it's likely that it won't make it to 10,000 on your first go. But that's okay. And you have other ideas, or you iterate on the first idea and you might, you know, your next set might be fine. So anyway,
that is an important lesson. And I'm glad you had those experiences, even if they didn't produce the outcomes you were hoping for, that allowed you to learn and iterate and thus proceed with your Women of NASA set. How did you decide on NASA for your next attempt? Which I now realize part of the answer is name recognition.
Right. So actually, my original idea was that this was going to be the Women of Apollo. That was actually my original idea for this, for the women's, the one that ultimately became Women of NASA. However, another set on LEGO Ideas came out shortly after I started thinking about it. And it was the Saturn V rocket set that I correctly predicted would not only get 10,000 votes, but would be produced. And I thought at the time, there's no way that they're going to pick two LEGO Ideas sets in a row that are both Apollo themed. I mean, as much as it was amazing to have, like, there was a ton of, you know, publicity around the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing, I still thought, they're just not going to do that, because there are so many different ideas that are completely unrelated to Apollo. Like, they just, from a marketing standpoint, would probably not do that. So that made me switch to a more generic set idea. And granted, this was still very, I was thinking of some of the people maybe that I might show, but like, I didn't have any concrete ideas as far as, I probably thought that Margaret Hamilton would be in it just because, you know, she's someone I knew I wanted to have in there, but, that's kind of how that evolved. And then it became Women of NASA just because, you know, I am a longtime space fan. I used to be an astronomy reporter for a long time. And, you know, that's just has been sort of my interest in science writing and science communication for a long time. And so, you know, when I had decided to switch it from Apollo to more generic NASA, then I thought, okay, well, let's think of some, you know, famous people who will bring in votes and who deserve and should rightly be recognized and celebrated. And then also maybe bring in a couple of people who maybe are not quite as well known, not quite as much of, you know, household names. So that's how that got started.
And it got you the opportunity to meet several of the people that you were including in the kit as well.
That is true. You know, I mentioned Margaret Hamilton. I won't go into the long background of this, but basically Margaret Hamilton and I both at the time lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I had read an article about her and was like, I want to write about her. Yeah, I'd read something small about her. And then I saw a longer profile about her and I was like, oh, dang, somebody scooped me, you know. But I said, I still want to meet her. Like we're neighbors. She has this amazing history. Why do people not know about her? Her picture with, you know, the iconic picture of her standing next to the code that her team worked on, you know, the Apollo guidance system code, you know, it was going around social media and I was like, people don't know her history. Like, what is the deal? Like, she needs to be better known. And so, you know, I did meet her after I made the set kind of go live. It was really fun. She came over to MIT and we just sat in the front, like right on 77 Mass Ave. We sat on the steps and, you know, she kind of didn't really understand what the contest was, but honestly, most people don't get that. So that was fine. But she was just thrilled that I had made this minifigure of her and we have become friends. I mean, she, you know, we write each other Christmas cards and before the pandemic, you know, I would go have tea with her every now and then. And so that has been great. I did actually work previously with Sally Ride, and she has, you know, long been an inspiration of mine. I mean, I jumped at the chance to go work with her at space.com when I was a young cub science writer, and she only stayed for a little while, and she went to go start another company, Sally Ride Science, which is still exists today as part of UC San Diego. But, you know, she is super iconic and probably the best known of the women of the NASA group. So I knew I wanted to include her. And, you know, Nancy Grace Roman is probably the one that had been the least known at the time. I had known her through a mutual friend, a former teacher of mine. And she was the one who I really was like, nobody's going to know who she is outside of, you know, NASA administration history and, you know, some of the people who are working in like the Hubble. And, you know, that's true. But, you know, I visited her a couple times in the process, you know, during the process and, she got a huge kick out of it. And unfortunately she passed away, shortly after the set launched, within a year. But, you know, she actually, in at least one history that I had seen her write out or an oral history had said like, you know, I've had many awards throughout my life, but probably the most fun has been, you know, being made into this Lego. So I felt really honored to have given her that opportunity, to really be recognized for her important work. And, did I meet the others? Let's see. I have not met Mae Jemison, although she was very gracious in, being excited to be part of the set. I did not get a chance to meet, Katherine Johnson, who, as you know, did not ultimately participate in the set. The people who appear in these sets, you know, their families have to kind of come to agreement with Lego and their family, for whatever reason, I actually do not know, decided to, you know, not be part of it. And I think that's it, right? Am I missing anybody? No.
No, I think that's it. Yeah. Although since the other podcast I host is all about Star Trek, I do need to mention that Mae Jemison was on Star Trek The Next Generation. She is the first real-life astronaut to ever be on Star Trek.
Yes, that was she's awesome in that way. She's such an eclectic. She has so many things that she's done in her career. And, you know, I mean, I do hope to meet her at one point. I was hoping to go out and meet her for this event in California. And long story short, I had to miss it. So someday I would love to meet her. She's just wonderful and fantastic. So, yeah.
That's awesome. It sounds like this kit had a wonderful reception, especially given that it got all 10,000 votes at a minimum. What did you do to promote it to get to that level?
So the Women of NASA set basically, it just was a stroke of magic of how that whole process went. There was a lot going on, you know, among other things, you know, NASA itself tweeted about the set. So that really got some attention, you know, and there's not like a similar clearinghouse for computing, right? So for my current set, so it's not, it's just not the same. So NASA tweeting about it. Also, it was around the same time as the Hidden Figures movie. The Hidden Figures movie had actually not come out yet by the time my set was being proposed. But, you know, people were talking about the book by Margot Shetterly, and we're talking about the film coming out, you know, soon. And so that really helped as well, because like literally some of the stars of the movie, like, you know, Taraji Henson, and I mean, I had like Pharrell Williams tweeting about the set. I mean, you know, that was just amazing and obviously got eyeballs on the set that just never would have happened otherwise. It was like a lightning. It was like lightning in a bottle. Like it just, it happened. It was one of the most quick set turnarounds in terms of getting to 10,000 votes. I had planned all these posts for social media for like a year because, you know, you have a year to get 10,000 votes. And so, I mean, I didn't have that many, but I had quite a few posts like ready to go, you know, for coinciding with various anniversaries and birthdays and things of this nature. And I just didn't have to use any of them. I did almost nothing compared to what I'm doing for other sets. And so I really just got extremely lucky. Also, I mean, I knew that NASA was very popular and, you know, Women in Science is also very popular. So it was just a very, a confluence of a lot of popular issues that people were just eager to see this product. And I, you know, I could sense that, and I was trying to promote that. And I did also get a little lucky with just the timing of some of the other, you know, things that were going on media wise. So yeah,
that's perfect. And you said that you were promoting this on Twitter. Twitter is not always the most positive of places. Did you get any sort of pushback? Like, did people get angry that you were quote unquote injecting politics into toys?
No. And no, I mean, there are certainly a few people who are like, well, where's the Men of NASA set, you know, and I get that. I understand that reaction. I think that's just people being uneducated about the fact that, you know, 95% of the sets previous to that had that were featuring astronauts, like did only feature male characters, you know? So this is sort of kind of taking one little step in the right direction in terms of equality. So, I mean, yeah, you definitely had a few people who were not crazy about it, you know, and also from some of the like Lego super fans, you know, it was a relatively simple set. Like a lot of the people who submit things on Lego Ideas are, you know, serious Lego artists, and they, you know, they do these like 2000 piece builds that are just fantastic and amazing. And they're works of art. Like they really are works of art. And I think there might have been a little resentment at the fact that my set was relatively simple. It was not big, you know, and, you know, it wasn't super complex in terms of building design. I think there was, you know, again, some resentment from some people who felt like it wasn't worthy of what they thought was a good set. But at the end of the day, you know, Lego Ideas is about bringing about new ideas, not just about, you know, beautiful art, which, I mean, some of them are both, and many of them are both. But sometimes, you know, you're thinking outside of the box is kind of one way to grab new audiences and think of new ways of marketing, you know, what Lego's trying to do. So
you had 1 year to get those 10,000 votes from when you submitted the idea to the end of the journey, when it was a finished product that people could buy. How long was that?
Oh, okay. Good question. So, so when I submitted the idea, I actually did submit it. It's an interesting question, but I submitted it for the very first time in March of 2016. And then I changed my mind about a couple of things, including the fact that I wasn't happy with some of the photographs. And I was like, you know what? I had submitted it toward the end of Women's History Month. And I just was like, you know, I'm going to just take it back and like really polish it. So you have a couple of days when you submit it to kind of change your mind and say, never mind. And so I did that. And so I was, you know, very eager to get it out there, but I was like, you know what? It's better to be good and just like wait and like perfect it. Right. So, I ultimately decided to launch it, on July, right around July 20th, which is the, you know, anniversary of the Apollo landing. And so from that point, it took 2 weeks, just over 2 weeks to get the votes, to get the 10,000. And then you have to wait until that current batch of, they collect the 10,000 vote getters in like 3 month batches, roughly, or maybe 4 months. I can't remember. And so you have to wait until that period is over. So I think it was like around September before, you know, they had stopped collecting, you know, sets for that review period. And then from that time, until I knew that the set was going to be selected for production, was a little more than 6 months, I would say, maybe 6 months. And, you know, I don't think it's revealing too much to say that, you know, because I became friendly with Margaret Hamilton. And as I said, you know, each of the people in the set have to basically work with Lego to, you know, ensure that they are in agreement with how the set looks. And, at a certain point, Margaret was like, well, what do you know? And be like, well, here's what I heard. And she'd be like, well, here's what I heard. So we were comparing notes and I think she spilled the beans a little bit early. And so I kind of had a sense that it was going to be picked before I should have known. I remember this one night in particular, she emailed me at like 10:30 at night. And she was like, Maya, you have to call me. She's like 80 years old. And I'm like, this is awesome. She was like a kid in a candy store, just like I was. So, that was fun. But, you know, I think the official day that I found out was in late January or early, I guess it must've been late January. They gave me a phone. They gave me a Skype call. This is before Zoom. And they had said something like, you know, we have a question to ask. We have a couple of questions to ask you. And I was like, oh boy, you know, I hope I didn't screw something up, because there had been some questions earlier on. And I was like, you know, just a little concerned about, you know, the whole process with dealing with actual people, like actual personalities. So I really wasn't sure what this Skype call was going to be. And as soon as I got on it, they were like, just kidding. We just wanted to tell you that you're getting it. So that was that was cool. But then after, so it was February of 2017 that the news came out. So, and then the set reveal, like the actual design, happened in the early fall. And then, so the final set became on sale November of 2017. So when all is said and done, it took almost 2 years from this time that I really started working on the set to, like, you know, really tinkering and making it, to the day that it went on sale was almost 2 years.
Wow. And I got to be at the release party, and I got to meet Nancy Grace Roman and Margaret Hamilton. And it was such a wonderful event to conclude this journey, or so I thought. If, you know, if some people had made their own Lego set and got on store shelves, they would be happy checking off that bucket list item. But you have more ambition than can be contained in a single kit, because you're now back on the Lego Ideas website with the Women of Computing. So what can you tell us about this new project of yours?
Sure. So this is actually a set that I had thought about doing quite a while ago, actually really shortly after the Women of NASA one came out. I had made a minifigure. Well, first of all, you know, I had known that Ada Lovelace was a popular figure. Among other things, she was literally the first character that I had ever seen in Lego in this way that, you know, you're popularizing real people. But then also I had made a minifigure of Grace Hopper back in, like, I don't remember if it was 2014 or 2015. So even before the Women of NASA set, and it had gotten lots of attention and lots of people loved it. And, from that, I kind of knew that I wanted to do something about women in computing in some way. And it was very nebulous, but I just kind of had it on the back burner. And then after the Women of NASA came out, I actually was approached about writing a book, and I was very excited about that opportunity. And I did take it, and I am, you know, my book is coming out next year. That was a huge, huge project and just took a ton of my time. And I'm very, very happy with it. It's a biography of physicist and engineer Mildred Dresselhaus, and the book is called Carbon Queen. So that's going to come out next year. But I basically said to myself, like, Maya, you only have so many hours in the day, like you need to prioritize. So at that time I decided I'm going to focus all of my, you know, extracurricular attention on this book until it's ready. And so I just did not even let myself, I didn't touch my Legos. Like I forbade myself from going near my Legos really until the book was essentially done. And that did not happen. And let me tell you, I got the final not the final edits, but when I sent in the first round of revisions, I basically was like, okay, like there are going to be more revisions still, but I'm basically done with the hard lift. And that didn't happen until this past December 2020. And like, seriously, like 2 weeks later, I was like, okay, let's go. Like I want to do this.
No rest for the weary.
No rest. No, because I really wanted to do it, but I was just like, nope, got to finish the book. And you know, I needed that because I needed to finish the book. It was a long slog. And you know, I'm excited for the book to come out, and that's going to happen. That's going to be next year. So I gave myself a little time to just be like, all right, let's build, you know, like let's do the Legos. So, I basically decided to focus on who I was going to make the set about. That was a bit of a process because obviously you're talking about so many women who are, and you know, same with the women of NASA too, but so many women who have contributed to computing history. And, you know, there are some big names, but it's a little bit more international, I would say, than, the NASA project, just because NASA's most of the people are American born. And I ultimately only went with one non-American, but I considered a lot of people. And I'm not going to go too in depth with the people that I picked, but I really, I certainly wanted to go with Grace Hopper. She was the one that I knew for a fact that I was going to go with, just because I had this experience with people really enjoying the minifigure I had made. And you know, I went from there, and I just was super excited about it and just trying to figure out which machines to show and which builds to show was a considerable amount of time and thinking. It probably took a lot more time to consider than the NASA one. But anyway, so here we are, and it's been fun so far. I mean, it definitely was not quite as fast in terms of the votes, but we're almost at 8,000 votes right now. So there's really, I'm very confident at this point. Like I'm pretty confident. I have like another 2 years, I want to say, or a year and a half, certainly. I forget how many days left I have to get those votes. And, you know, we've been fortunate to get, I haven't had any day with fewer than 60 or so votes and quite a few with, you know, at the beginning there were quite a few. But now it's at a steady drumbeat and we're getting there. So, you know, crossing fingers, you never know, but, I'm hopeful.
So looking at this set on the Ideas website, you have 6 women in here so far. So with so many wonderful, famous, powerful, talented women in the history of computing, which 6 did you choose for this set?
You know, it's Grace Hopper, and it's, Annie Easley, who was a pioneering computer scientist, and actually she did so many things with NASA. But she's best known for, she's done so many things, but probably the best known for her work on the Centaur rockets, and her coding of those, which led to, some of the outer solar system, actually Mars, but also outer solar system, exploration, probes, including Cassini and the Voyagers. So, you know, she is fantastic. And then there's also Gladys West, who, you know, some people may know of her as one of the architects of GPS. I mean, her coding work directly led to the development of the Global Positioning System, which is ubiquitous in our world today. you know, I her vignette's awesome because it has a little globe on it with GPS. And yeah. And then so the two ENIAC women who actually represent these six women who are these leading programmers. And so there's Jean Jennings Bardick and Betty Holberton, who were actually the leaders among those six. And they were with the ENIAC computer, which was one of the very first like digital all electronic, you know, like lightning speed computers. And then finally, there's one more. Yes, Ada Lovelace, of course. And there's a model of Ada with her analytical engine.
And they seem to be mostly focused on, would you say, like the early history of computing?
Yes. And part of that, again, is, you know, credit where credit's due in the beginning. But also, and, you know, there's a number of factors. One, there's the machines are easier to show. The build aspect of Lego Ideas projects is significant. And, you know, one of the problems that I faced in the selection process was, you know, a lot of the women who have made their names and made amazing careers and made amazing advances in computing have done so in realms that are very hard to illustrate, just like literally illustrate on 2D paper, but then also trying to make it into a 3D model is even harder. So, you know, there are like Turing Award winners that I obviously would have loved to include or to consider anyway, but it just didn't work out that way because you really need to have a significant build and something that is recognizable and not so esoteric that people are going to be like, I'm not voting for this. So, it, you know, it's tough because a lot of people have come out and say, well, why hasn't so-and-so been, you know, part of this set? But I'm really happy with the people I selected. The people I selected are all hugely important to our, you know, computing infrastructure in one way or another. And I think, you know, I'm excited about showing them to a broader audience.
Of the six women you've chosen, only one is still alive. So what does that mean for permissions? Should this progress beyond the idea stage?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, Lego really ultimately, their lawyers would have to answer that question. I don't really know what their process is. I mean, you know, we dealt with a mix of people who were both living and deceased last time. And I'm guessing that maybe someone like Ada Lovelace, there might be a statute of limitations on, you know, needing to get permissions. I don't know how that works. I mean, certainly with copyright, for instance, you know, there are limits to the how that works. But I am not a lawyer, so I don't know. But you know, and you know, that is actually one of the reasons why I ultimately ended up with slightly more vignettes this time, because, you know, as last time you guys probably realized, like we did have one of my vignettes have to drop out, for, you know, IP reasons essentially. And I am certainly aware that that could happen again here. And so that is one of the main reasons why I decided to make, more vignettes and have more people, because, you know, it is certainly possible that in the, you know, if we get to 10,000 and if Lego decides that this is something they want to pursue, it could be the case that, it's just too much, you know, to expect that all of the people and all of the machines, I mean, that's the other thing. Each of the machines presumably is an IP as well. So you not only, for instance, with the UNIVAC would have to get permission from like the Grace Hopper family or whomever is the estate on that, but also you have the UNIVAC. Whoever owns that IP would have to okay it too. So, I mean, I am cognizant of that. It might be a lot harder actually to actually get this project over the finish line because of that. But, you know, I decided to go for it anyway. And, I'm hopeful that with enough creativity and, you know, I've heard from a few family members actually of people that are in the set, just having seen it on social. The son, I guess, I don't know if she has any other sons, but one of the children, Jean Jennings Bardick from the ENIAC project, had tweeted me about it and said that he thought his mom would like this set. Also like a nephew of, Betty Holberton, also of the ENIAC, had seen it and was super excited. So, you know, I'm hopeful that, that aspect is not going to be a problem, but you never know. You never know. So,
in terms of complexity or number of bricks, is this similar to the Women of NASA set?
That's a really good question, and I keep meaning to count the parts. I have not done that yet. A couple of people have asked me. It is definitely more complex, I for a fact to know that, but I don't remember exactly how many parts, how many elements are being used. On the one hand, people probably forget this, but my original Women of NASA set had like a frame, which was showing the women in like a posable frame that you could also put them with their little vignettes. And, you know, now you can actually buy like Lego dots sets that have frames, and there's like a new Lego art, you know, realm that you can buy like framed artwork. So I kind of feel like, okay, well, they decided, I mean, I don't know if I was the only inspiration, but, you know, they decided not to do the frame thing. And so that kind of added to the part count on my old set. But this set, just each of the individual vignettes definitely has more parts. I mean, a lot of them are just more detailed, and they have lots more little tiny parts. So I don't know the exact number, but yeah.
This project is on an excellent trajectory. It already has, as you said, almost 8,000 votes. It has to get 10,000. It says in the next 738 days, so you have like 2 years to meet that goal.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm feeling fairly confident about it, because even if I mean, at a certain point, if you just get like a handful every day, you'll get it. But, you know, as I said, I've been averaging, I don't have the exact average, but I mean, I haven't gotten less than, like I said, 60, like ever. Every day that this set has been up there, there's been at least 60 new votes a day. So, and, you know, some days more. So, you know, with that, hopefully we could be able to get it within the next few weeks or months.
But with the Women of NASA, as you said, it was sort of lightning in a bottle, where it was just the perfect storm of all these other events, a perfect confluence. With the Women of Computing, you can't necessarily rely on that same playbook. So how are you advertising this set?
Well, I have to say, I mean, there are different ways that I've thought about doing it, but I also am definitely limited in the time that I can spend on this project. So, I mean, I have mostly been focused on Twitter. I've put it on Facebook and a couple, you know, LinkedIn and stuff, and Instagram, but I haven't really promoted it hardcore there. You know, there are events that will be coming up, like the Grace Hopper conference that happens every year. And, you know, you can kind of glom onto that hashtag or whatever. You know, so that's certainly something. I have just been in touch with some people who really want this set to happen. And I mean, I haven't pressed it because I haven't felt the need to, but I feel like asking some of those folks to kind of help me promote it again, like they absolutely will, but I just haven't felt like I've needed to do that yet. So, you know, I do feel like the people, and let me tell you, like, again, I've had four sets, and I've also just seen many sets go through social media and on the Lego Ideas site. And when people use the word, I need this set, like the word need, just like, it's just, there's something about the identification that people have with some of these sets, like certainly the NASA one, but also, you know, Ellen Koyman's earlier, women's science or women minifigure set, which ultimately became the Research Institute. I mean, people were saying like, I need this set in my life, like, because it represents me in a way that nothing else, no other toy really does, you know? And when I start seeing that, and when I start seeing those Futurama, like, gifts of like, shut up and take my money, you know that you have a popular set. So, and something that really resonates with people. And that makes me really happy to see those. And I've seen enough of them now that I feel like there's enough people out there who will vote for it. It's just a matter of getting the information out there that this is available or that this is potentially available. So, I'm not super, you know, I feel like ultimately at the end of the day, we're going to get the 10,000 votes. So, and my limited time has basically focused on Twitter. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. But this Polygamer podcast will hopefully like help a little bit. But honestly, I've just enjoyed talking to you, Ken, about this project, because a lot of people only see the finished product and they don't really know what goes into a project like this. So.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot of things that I didn't know. I didn't realize how long it takes and all the different permissions that are involved. For those listeners who are excited about this project and do need it in their lives, what's the best way for them to help?
Well, the best way is to go onto LEGO Ideas website and find the set and vote for it. Now, you do have to sign up for a LEGO account. They won't spam you is what I keep hearing from people saying, like, you will get updates if you sign up for that. And it is fun to be part of the community. I mean, I, even in the off years when I was really working on my book only, I still would go on there and like see what was up and, you know, upvote things that I thought were really interesting and would make a fun product. But you have to go onto the LEGO Ideas site. If you don't have an account already, start one up and then just press that support button. And that's pretty much it. And, you know, obviously it really is great if you can put it out there on your social media so other people can hear about it.
And for those who are inspired by everything you do and by the potential of the LEGO Ideas set, how do they move forward with their own ideas?
Yeah, if you want to build your own and if you want to do anything like that, you go to LEGO Ideas and you can just upload your idea. I don't remember how old you need to be. I think you might need to be 13, but I have to double check that. And you can just go on there and just put your idea out there. And obviously, you know, I wish you all luck in getting support for your sets. You know, LEGO Ideas actually has other projects and activities beyond just product ideas. They have activities. They are sort of, they have prizes that they'll put out a call for, like, okay, I think the current one is like, show us a beach scene or show us like by the sea. And so you can kind of put out fun ideas that are based on prompts and LEGO will give prizes. And I don't think they would produce the sets, but it's a really fun community. So I do encourage people to get involved.
Awesome. And LEGO is so popular right now. There have been so many video games, LEGO City Undercover, LEGO Star Wars, and of course, LEGO Movie, LEGO Batman Movie. Even Ruth Bader Ginsburg, one of your Supreme Court justices from your original Justice League set, was in one of the movies. That must have been very gratifying to finally see her as a LEGO character.
I mean, I've had like mixed feelings about that, I gotta say, because, you know, a big to-do was made about that's not allowed. We can't possibly honor someone who is currently in government. And then seeing it in the movie, you know, when I was like, you know, had a big slap on the wrist, like, that stung a little bit. I'm not gonna lie. Like, you know, I was certainly happy that she was getting the recognition. That's great. And I know she was happy about it. I think I saw something that she, you know, got a chuckle out of it. And so ultimately, at the end of the day, like, yes, of course, of course. But, you know, personally, I'm not going to lie. I was like, oh, now it's okay, you know?
Yeah, I can see how that would be frustrating.
Yeah. Any chance, any opportunity to kind of, you know, bring people who have done amazing things into the limelight, whether it's women or men. But like, I am really a proponent of just like giving credit where it's due in terms of people who have advanced science and engineering, as well as, you know, giving opportunities to people. You know, Justice Ginsburg was a champion of equal rights for women. And so I think that was wonderful.
That's fantastic. And for those who want to do more than just upvote your idea, if they want to follow you on Twitter, where you've been talking about this project, where would they go for that?
Sure. Well, the LEGO handle for the specific set, which has been tweeting things specifically about the set, including, you know, little known facts and pictures about some of the women in the set. The Twitter is LEGO CS Women on Twitter. And just my regular handle is 20Tauri.
And is that a constellation?
It is. It's the it's the Pleiades cluster. And 20 Tauri is the one that's called Maya, which is my name. So that's why.
Oh. You know, all the years I've known you and I never knew that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Maya, so much for your time. I have voted for your LEGO Idea project and I'm looking forward to buying it when it's on store shelves.
Awesome. Thank you, Ken, so much. It was great talking with you.
This has been Polygamer, a GameBits production. Find more episodes, read our blog, or send feedback at polygamer.net.